The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit kuci.org. You're listening to In the Garden on 88.9 KUCI Irvine. I'm your host, Bill Brooks, University of California Master Gardener. Not to be confused with the chocolate treat, today we're talking about truffles, the delectable underground fungus. The first recorded mention of truffles dates back to the Neo-Sumerians of the 20th century BCE. We're fortunate to have Tom Michaels and Susie Gott-Segre with us today so we can learn more about this unique organism. Tom is the owner-operator of Tennessee Truffle, located in the foothills of the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains in Tennessee. He has a PhD in plant pathology, and that's been an area where he's done a lot of research. He's been a scientist for both Monterey Mushroom and Dole Foods in the mushroom division. Susie Gott-Segre is a chef, fiddler, forager from Madison County, North Carolina, also in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains. She's a certified culinary professional and certified specialist of wine who holds a diploma in gastronomy and taste from Cordon Bleu. She has authored 4 books on Appalachian cooking, culture, growing up there, truffles, and foraging. So let's begin our discussion about truffles with identifying what exactly is a truffle.
This is it's actually a little hard to do it because it has a lot of different conceptions. People have a lot of different conceptions about a truffle. The simplest way might be able to say it's a fungus like a mushroom that grows on that fruits underground, and so it makes a slight difference between a regular mushroom and a truffle. And it's a funny thing in terms of how we define it. The USDA in all their agricultural work and statistics doesn't even have a definition for it. In other words, in a legal sense, we don't know whether a truffle is a mushroom or not. That's a very important.
That's thing. Interesting.
So it's kind of it hasn't made the radar in terms of, the cultural scene or the legal scene. So anyway, to get down to what might interest your listeners, they're more interested in the cooking and growing aspects of the truffle. The truffle is, sometimes we speak of it as an underground mushroom, and that's a general term. To be a little more scientifically accurate, for scientists, the truffle is thought to be a member of the Ascomycete family of fungi. And within the Ascomycetes, some people are even more specific to say it is only species of the genus Tuber. Other Ascomycete species, some people classify them as truffles, some not so much. And in the case of the genus Tuber, before the gene jockeys got involved about maybe 10 years ago, we thought there were about 60 species of truffles. My major professor at Oregon State University, where I did my graduate work on truffles, Dr. Jim Trappi, wrote the monograph on truffles, and he had more or less about 60 species. And then now the gene jockeys got into it, and they said, well, this DNA is a little different than that one, and so now we're over 400 species.
So we're way, way down to it, almost a genetic level of studying these organisms.
Yes, but the thing is they're so difficult to grow. The classic way of defining a species is if it can interbreed and mate, then they're the same species. Mm-hmm. But since we don't have a very good ability to grow and form the sexual stages of these truffles, we don't have the ultimate proof that how many species we actually have. So
what we do know, though, is it's something that is very tasty, and we certainly like to eat it. And I know Susie's going to address that later in the show, but I've heard about black and white truffles. But it is my understanding that there's many different species. Can you tell us a little more about the different types, especially the culinary types that we like to eat?
Yeah, that's a good point. The truffles, in terms of the culinary aspects of it, we're talking mostly the aromas that truffles give off. lot of other mushrooms have their culinary desirability has to do more with their protein flavors and fatty flavors. But in the case of the truffles, we're talking about the volatile aromatics. And so among all the different species, kind of have to step back and ask, why is the truffle producing, you know, in a teleological sense, all of these aromatics? And that's, since it grows underground, it's a little hard to spread your spores around, so it wants to attract animals to eat them. Mm-hmm. And so it puts out this bloom of aromas. And some animals like to eat, you know, stuff that smells like sewer gas, and some truffles do have, you know, a terrible odor, and a handful of truffles have these aromas that that we humans love. And so in the case of the, we can kind of, in a very general terms, divide the type of truffles of culinary interest into black truffles and white truffles. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of extension into kind of brownish, reddish truffles, which are kind of orphans in the whole culinary landscape. In the case of the black truffles, generally speaking, and I'm going to have to use, forgive me, Susie, I'm going to use kind of like the wine lingo here in terms of how to describe to the listener what the black truffles are like. You might say that depending on their stage of ripeness, they might be floral or fruity or earthy or musky, have those kinds of tones or notes. And in the case of the generally speaking, those truffle species that are in the white truffle group, they tend to be more sharp in the sense of sulfury, garlicky, oniony. Please help me out here, Susie.
Yeah, well, you've got it right there. I would add sensuous, pungent, sexy, sweet, kind of dark chocolate, sorghum, molasses, olive, and various other things to the black truffle profile, nutty, oaky, and then the white truffles, I would say, are more garlicky and peppery and petrally and spicy, really, really heady and intense.
Oh yeah, like petrol. There, I had an Australian truffle friend, and he's actually he was my first truffle hunting mate. He said they smell like bitumen. I said bitumen. That was how the Australians, you know, pronounce called their asphalt. So it is like that. But Bill, yeah, did you notice the?
Yes,
he's quite the wordsmith there. So
yes, and that's
really get a barrage.
And that's what we appreciate about having both of you here, is Tom can bring in the growing aspects and Susie can talk about the wonderful things that we can do with these to really change the way that we eat, which is an awesome field. And planting and eating, I think, go hand in hand together here. So tell me about the optimal growing conditions. What kind of climate? I've heard Mediterranean climates like we have here in Southern California really work well for growing truffles.
Yeah. Now, that's such an interesting question. It sounds like it'd be a simple answer, but it really isn't, because you have to look at how the truffle survives in its ecological niche, survives and thrives, mm-hmm. and reproduces. And in the case, I guess, speaking in more general terms, the black truffle group, in particular, Tuberbulana sporum, which is the major black truffle of trade, it's the black winter truffle. Tuberbulana sporum is rather forgiving in its growing conditions. It can take quite a differential in yearly moisture. But it does need a seasonal climate, something of the mm-hmm. Mediterranean climate, where we do have seasons. It would be impossible to grow the truffle in the tropics. It's Perigord truffle. But
okay.
Here we have enough climate. The temperate climate variability, as long as our soils don't freeze, when we freeze our truffles below, you know, the frost line.
Right.
If we can survive frost into the soil in the winter, that's an ideal condition, growing condition for the truffles. The soil is, in the case of the black truffle, a lot of the species tend to thrive and outcompete their competitors in somewhat slightly alkaline to actually fairly alkaline soils.
We're okay.
On the pH of the general specifications that, you know, the French have done work over many decades about what they find where their truffles grow, and they've identified a pH range of about 7.6 to 8.1 is where this is the case of the Perigord black winter truffle, where those fruit bodies appear, and some of the other growing conditions for the other truffles have not been quite as well specified or determined. In the case of the white truffle group, some of them are actually, we're having some good luck developing a white truffle species that grows with even a more forgiving set of growing conditions than mm-hmm. the black winter truffle. We can talk about that later in the program, maybe. It's Tuber borkii, but your listeners are probably familiar with the white alba truffle, mm-hmm. which is, you know, in terms of the price point, it's off the charts. There's no explaining how you figure the price of a white truffle. That's because its ecological niche is so tight that we have barely begun to understand it. In other words, it's just not your soil. You have to have certain types of vegetation. Certain weeds have to appear or whatever.
Yeah, because that's what I understand, that truffles, unlike mushrooms and other fungi, have lost their ability to decompose plant matter, so they have to live symbiotically on a tree. So tell us a little bit about the species of trees these truffles live on.
Well, generally speaking, they are deciduous. I shouldn't say that. The conifers. We tend to have, in the case of the black truffle group, they tend to be in the Betulaceae and Fagaceae, the oaks and the hickories and what have you, and also in the pine family too. Then there's a few other ones that we find them on. We find them on Atlantic cedar and linden trees and some other ones. So, but generally speaking, that seems to be their required hosts. There's a very large group of trees. Like, for example, if you look at the ashes and the maples and what have mm-hmm. you, they do not have the biochemical machinery to be able to work in symbiosis with the truffle. They work with a totally other different group of mycorrhizal fungi. Oh, something of note, I think you should very important. We talk about mycorrhizal, you know, a fungus that and a root that grow in symbiosis. That's, of course, kind of the definition of the term. But in our biological world, about 95% of all plants are mycorrhizal. It's the norm and not the exception.
Yeah, we study that a lot through Master Gardeners and promote that. You know, we're talking about things that increase the mycorrhizal fungi that grow all over plant roots. So I think our listeners are familiar with that, and that's just basically what a truffle is.
Yeah, it's very beneficial. I mean, it's a pretty smart way, if we want to get technical. The truffle has a much greater surface to volume ratio as it's growing through the soil than a root does. So that means that the truffle is much more efficient at picking up water and nutrients and delivering it to the host tree. So the host says, well, I'll sacrifice a little bit of my sugar up here in the leaves, send it down to the roots and feed it to my friend the truffle. But in a more cynical term, as a scientist, we sometimes call it mutual parasitism instead of symbiosis.
Yeah.
They both benefit from each other, but they're
right.
not working necessarily in their best interests.
So here in Orange County, we have a lot of oaks, native oaks in particular. And we have sycamore trees as well. Those are our native trees within the area. Would those do well for hosting truffles?
Oh, perfect. Well, that was the perfect setup question. The
Okay.
sycamore is endomycorrhizal. You could never grow a truffle on a sycamore tree. And the oak tree, however, is ecto, that's kind of a family of
Okay.
mycorrhizae that the truffle is a member of. So the oaks are a pretty darn good host. But now you have to ask yourself where you are. And I remember my folks retired on the central coast of California. We had these beautiful high pH caliche soils where the live oaks were growing. And those would be great. That was a great candidate environment for growing the truffles. But some of these oaks, like pin oak and what have you, they like the acid soils. And so we have a little conflicting situation. The truffle, in the case of the black Perigord truffle, likes these alkaline environments. And I tried growing my under white oaks here in Tennessee, tried mycorrhizing the truffle onto them, and that was a total dud because they hated acid soils. They turned chlorotic and nutrient deficient. You couldn't make the two work together. So it depends. That's adapted to an alkaline soil. That's a good candidate to.
Yeah, and that would depend. And, definitely one of the things a home grower or someone that wants to experiment this would probably need to do is send a soil sample off to a lab to find out all of the acid and bases
And
components of
also,
that
it's
soil.
something you really should realize that in the case of doing something simple as changing the pH, we do that, of course, with liming, and that's the modus operandi for most of the truffle growers here in the United States. So we don't have too many naturally occurring high pH soils, so we lime them up and get that soil pH propitious for the truffle to take off.
And that's something you're doing where you're growing them in Tennessee. You're changing the pH of the soil by doing that.
And also what that does is remember, the roots are juicy. There's thousands of fungi that wanna get those juices and live off, micro symbiosis in some cases with the roots. And by adding lime to the soil, we have eliminated well over, I'm picking a real ballpark number, well over 90% of the possible competitors of the truffles. We've eliminated them because they just can't do well in these high pH soils. So by liming, we're also trying to make selective conditions for the truffle to give it a little competitive advantage over all the other fungi that want to symbiose.
So if the home gardener, somebody that say had oak trees, wanted to start experimenting with this, how would they begin? What would they start doing with the growing?
Well, this is a case of, in the case of a fungus on a root, the fungus that gets there first has kind of primacy of place. So if you say, well, I got this beautiful oak in my backyard, I'm just going to spoon in a few, shovel in a few truffle spores. It's the odds of that are just, let's
Pretty
just
low.
say,
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, you could be one heck of a clever gardener and maybe make it work, but if you want to have to wait for years to find out if you were clever enough, it's the better strategy is to actually get the truffle on the roots before the other fungi show up. And so we start germinating oak seeds and hazelnut seeds and other potential host species seeds in a nursery environment.
And you inoculate them.
And
Yeah, earth.
inoculate, excuse me, Bill, is a very generous term. We just simply infest the soil
It's
with a
okay.
lot of truffle. So it's not like we're taking a syringe, and
Right.
putting
So
it
you're
on the
actually
plant.
starting then with a tree that's potted, so you haven't put it in the ground yet.
So we give it a head start, get a good colonization of the truffle on those roots, and then and actually that's tricky too. Gosh, I wish we had two programs we could talk about, because it gets so deep. But there's some fascinating things going on with the sexuality of the truffle, even in the nursery, where you may end up with a tree that's only quote female or male, and then you might have the truffle yes, it's there on the roots, but it's never going to produce truffles until it finds the opposite mating type.
So, oh, yeah.
So this is all new news. We had no idea until about 10 years ago that the truffle is behaves so cantankerously, even in the nursery environment.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, because they live underground, how do they spread their spores? How do they get into that reproduction?
That's one of my little pet ideas. I learned it from my father. I was raised on a button mushroom farm. And,
mm-hmm.
And you actually can make a living at growing mushrooms to your gardener listeners. Anyways, and my father used to say when he was growing his mushroom crop, and I didn't get it as a kid, but after, you know, working a little while in this world, he said, I was part of the ecology when I go into a mushroom growing room. The organisms in that compost would speak to me and get it, and I would encourage the ones the good ones to grow, and I would say decapitate the bad ones when I saw those. I was part of the ecology, and so that's where we are with the truffle. When I'm in the truffle is saying to me, I need to spread my spores. I taste good. Come and get me. Make more of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got us. We are part of that ecology when we're in the, when we're managing the truffles. It's got us.
Us as well as in any other organism, especially a vertebrae organism.
Yeah, any other critter. Well, they also snails.
Snails. Oh wow. Pods,
some of those pick them up too. Earthworms decades old work, but there was some looking at earthworm castings that might stimulate, when the truffle spores were inside the earthworm, that it stimulated the germination of the truffle spores for moving it around the environment and getting the truffle to reach its goal.
So they really are dependent on a lot of organisms to spread their spores from one place to the other.
Yeah, and then you take it to the next degree of separation. Okay, you got this little vol or some rodent there that's eaten it, and now comes the owl, and it eats.
I see.
Owl eats the rodent. Now you've spread those spores around by miles. So it's a fun thing, but you are part of the ecology. It's tricking us. We're another organism that wants to eat
spread the spores. So I guess you know when you're talking about that, then using a good organic compost, this is another reason why a good organic compost is so good for anything you're growing, because it does influence those good funguses that we want growing in our roots.
Well, that's a little more complicated than that.
Oh.
Many of those organisms, why we love compost as gardeners, one of the things, like you say, it's a good substrate for growing a lot of beneficial organisms in the soil for your garden plants. At the same time, a lot of those organisms, a lot of those are back an old-fashioned term, since I'm an old-fashioned scientist, we used to call some fungi in the soil hyperparasites,
mm-hmm.
where they would be, they're beneficial to the host plant because they parasitize the fungal pathogens that might attack the host plant. And so you actually making a very verdant soil full of organic matter isn't necessarily the recipe for good truffle production. In fact, it can be extremely detrimental. The organic matter levels that have been pretty much established for good, I'm speaking now for Perigord Black Winter Truffle, of which we know the most about conditions, tends to be anywhere from about maybe 2% organic matter to, in some cases, you might get up to 6-7% organic matter, but you really don't want
you don't want to overdo it with truffle growing.
Definitely not. And then the state of decomposition of that organic matter you're adding is absolutely, it is extremely important too. If you put in a fresh green manure organic matter, you know, put in your lawn clippings and what have you, you're asking for trouble. You want a well-decomposed organic matter that's basically just very lignified stuff without a lot of free nutrients there for the soil organisms. You want the organic matter more for structure and for being a pH buffer, you know, since organic matter has a lot of acid groups on it, it makes a beautiful soil buffer for managing your nutrient availabilities for the tree and the truffle.
You've certainly, I think, got a lot of us thinking about a possibility in gardening, a direction we could go that many of us may not have thought about. So this is fantastic. So when you get to the point of finding the truffles, Susie, I believe that France is kind of the modern culinary use of truffles. Is that correct? Would I be correct in assuming that?
That France is one of the countries that uses truffles the most in cuisine. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
I would say the French and the Italians. And of course, the French have had the good fortune of finding Périgord truffles in Périgord, hence the name. They've had perhaps a little bit more easy access to that particular truffle than other countries have had. And given that the French love to cook with butter as the main three ingredients, and butter is one of the best hosts to truffle flavor because it captures the aromatic essence of the truffle and holds it in place, and can then diffuse that on pasta or potatoes or rice or whatever you happen to be cooking. That is a very good base. So yes, the French who love butter and cream are particularly well suited to making the truffle shine. And the Italians, of course, who are known for their Alba truffle, which is the white truffle profile rather than the black truffle flavor profile that we discussed just briefly, they tend to cook with sharper, more acidic ingredients like tomatoes and garlic. Garlic is quite a strong flavor, and so you don't necessarily want to use tons of garlic with your milder flavored truffles because it's going to eclipse that truffle flavor. But for the Alba truffle, which is already quite garlicky in itself, in fact, you know, in a way, it almost renders the garlic obsolete. But Italians love that garlic flavor, and so their type of cuisine, I think, is best suited to the white truffle flavor profile, which is sharper and more garlicky, more almost lemony as well. The French, the Périgord truffle, being a little bit, just slightly more subtle, but more musky and more of that deep earth, dark chocolatey kind of a flavor. It goes particularly well, as I said, with the cream and the butter.
So it's an oil, and you hear about truffle oil. So it is that essence of oil that carries that flavor.
You're
going
to go into truffle oil?
It's like when you call Appalachia.
I did.
Somebody's going to throw an apple at you. When you mention truffle oil, you're going to bring up a whole lot of hackles here.
Okay.
Tom, do you want to expound on the scientific?
I'll say just one word, bismethyl thiomethane.
I'm not going to pronounce that one.
When you get artificial truffle oil, it's one of the it's one of the major aroma constituents of truffles. In fact, it's something that maybe we think the animals key in on when they're hunting the truffles. In other words, when you see truffle oil, it's almost like the problem we have with olive oils, where you can sell something that has mostly soybean oil in it, presented as olive oil.
Right.
On, you know, the trading, the rules and the regulations. Well, in the case of truffle oil, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah,
it would be a gimmick.
Yeah, put a few pieces of truffles, shavings in there to look like, oh yeah, it's got truffles in it. And then the major additive is a is a feedstock from the chemical industry called bismethylthiomethane. In the case of that, it's one of those classic cases of you get what you pay for. It's if it's too inexpensive, it's too good to be true. So.
And in the case of truffle oil, like truffle salts, it is that perhaps one flavor that's been extracted, and so you are experiencing a very, very tiny profile of what a truffle really tastes like. And the danger is that people who have tasted only truffle oil because that's all they can afford, or it's what they found in restaurants on french fries or popcorn, they think that that's what a truffle tastes like. And then they're looking for that when they taste a real truffle, and sometimes they're disappointed because they are expecting something less than what a truffle actually is. But a truffle has, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, it might have over 100 different aromatic profiles. For instance, if you like gumbo, gumbo for people from the South or New Orleans, you know that gumbo is a pot where you put everything in one dish and you've got lots and lots of different flavors. And when you make gumbo, you build on those flavors, and it's a very intense stratified dish. But if you extract just one of the elements that you put in gumbo, for instance, celery. Okay, celery, if you've eaten gumbo, you wouldn't necessarily think that gumbo tastes like celery.
Right.
But if you extract that, just that one flavor, and say, here, this is what gumbo tastes like, and celery tastes
so
celery,
then, okay.
They're going to be disappointed.
That makes sense.
And it's like that with truffle oil.
May I interject very quickly here, maybe a news you can use category for your listeners?
Sure.
And that's that bismethylthiomethane. You know when you've got it if you have a metallic aftertaste.
Oh, that's very good to know.
It's a slam dunk. If you've got that, you don't have the real thing.
All right. So the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the state, the university, or the UC Board of Regents, and this is a perfect spot for us to say this. For more information on this show, visit kuci.org. You're listening to 88.9 KUCI Irvine. This is In the Garden, and we're talking about truffles with our guests, Tom and Susie. So talking about, I think this is a good spot to get to the harvest, and we've seen trained dogs and trained pigs that sniff for truffles. So since they grow underground, that's kind of how you have to find them. Can you add a little bit about how truffles are harvested or found? And are dogs and pigs the things we use?
Yeah, I wanted my cat to learn how to do it, because I'm more of a cat person than a dog person. So in the case, historically, let's back up maybe 100 years back when truffles were just a seasonal treat for the peasants in southern Europe, where they could hunt them on their farms. And what they noticed, pigs love to root around, and that's, root tubers and what have you are one of their major natural environment, major food sources. Mm-hmm. So pigs are natural hunters for truffles. And so back in those days, you were a peasant farmer, and you had your sow and your barrow and your pigs, and train them to, you didn't have to train them. They could just nose up a truffle, and then you'd haul it off to your kitchen, and you just had your nice holiday meal or what have you. Mm-hmm. But then now with modern refrigeration and transportation and what have you, that's when the truffle left the farm, so to speak, and became more popular in the wider culture and more highly distributed. So pigs were not necessarily the best option in that case. They're very big. Sows are much better than the boars are.
Yeah.
Because the truffle, in the case of the black Perigord truffle, one of those, how do you say those steroidal compounds, epiandrosterone, a male sex hormone is produced by the truffle. Don't ask me the why the truffle decided to make some of that, but maybe it's again to attract a sow to spread the spores around. Interesting evolutionary question
that is.
There. But so today now, dogs are easier to handle.
Easier to train as well.
Easier to train, yeah. And they're, I know people have pigs friends and buddies, but dogs tend to be the rigor when it comes to having a nice buddy as a pet. So
right.
So
they're a little easier to keep in the house the 10 months of the year when you're not producing truffles as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, this is actually of note. A lot of the professional truffle hunters in Europe, they are not buddies. They're not. They're a man's best friend with them. They treat them like a stock animal. You know, they're out there in their pens, and that's all
they're there for, is just to work.
They have for them. We have a little softer hearts, some of us anyway. So we like our dogs. Yeah. Training them. So why don't you go on about that?
Well, that's another science in itself, dog training. And we have a couple of really wonderful folks here in our country whose specialty that is. One is Lois Martin, who is located in the Knoxville, Tennessee area. Another is Alana. Remind me Alana's last name.
Oh, I just know her as Alana, too.
Yeah. Anyway, she's out on the Pacific West coast in Oregon. And then, you know, there are a few people who are breeding the Legato Romagnolo, which is the Italian water dog, essentially, that is very well suited for looking for truffles because it has a very intense, particularly adapted to this. And it's a cute as heck dog to have around, too. Tom has had experience with that.
Yeah, I had.
Really need the most expensive dog on the market to hunt truffles either. You can have, so long as your dog is not an easily distracted dog like a beagle that's going to run off after every rabbit, you can train a lot of other dogs as well.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed, yeah, I had my Legato, and she was a real honey. One of the biggest characteristics for truffles is they have work ethic. They can go all day.
Yeah.
They only want to find those truffles. They'll go all day. And it's amazing. And what I understand about it is when a dog is sampling the aromas in the soil, its brain is working as hard as our brains are when we're in deep concentration and thought. Up to 25% of their metabolic energy is committed to identifying those aromas. I mean, it's
wow.
It's a very serious sort of an endeavor for a dog.
So, Susie, we've touched a little bit on the flavor, and we know that maybe a lot of our listeners haven't actually had the truffle. If any exposure, maybe it's the oil. So can you talk a little bit about the kinds of foods that are especially enhanced by truffles and what we do so the people that are on the cooking end of listening to this show know where to start?
Sure. You want to take the plainest, most basic foods, actually. Truffle is a rich man's food that goes well with a poor man's purse, because just a tiny, tiny bit can go a really long way, and it can make very ordinary foods extraordinary in a second. So you want, I think, pasta, rice, potatoes, eggs, and anything, of course, with cream, butter, bacon fat, without too much of that intense bacon flavor. You don't want to overpower with bacon. But essentially, anything that is a mild food is very well enhanced by truffles, and then you want to have that fattiness or that creaminess to transmit the aroma to the food itself. Because if you just shave a truffle on top of a dish, you are, the truffle itself doesn't have so much flavor as is. It has this incredible aroma, but you've got to capture that and disseminate it. If you ate the truffle sliver all by itself, it has a little bit of a cardboardy texture almost. And so you really need that. You need the food to enhance it. Like, you need the tree to grow the truffle.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to think about is seasonality, because of course there are various different truffle species, and they are ripe at different times of year. So say the tuber melanosporum is in its fruiting stage from mid-November through mid-March, and generally its peak is after Christmas. And so you want to think about foods that are ripe and ready at that time of year. Obviously, root vegetables are good, squashes are good. Hog killings in the South take place from between Thanksgiving and Christmas, so often you might have a little bit of fat back that you can use, and enhancing your truffle flavors. The tuber borkii, the white species that we are able to grow well in the North Carolina East Country under pines, that is available from mid-January through the end of April, and it pairs well also with root vegetables. And then if you get into a little bit of the early tomato season, it's a little bit early for that. But asparagus, you could pair that with asparagus because okay. That being more garlicky will stand up to something that has a little more flavor. The tuber estivum and the tuber empanadum, they are available more from the summer into the early parts of winter. And so they go well with summer dishes and also with the early root vegetables, the squashes and pasta, of course, always pasta. Pasta goes with everything.
Yeah.
The magnatum, the Italian white or alba truffle, is available from September to October, largely through December, and is ideal to go into autumn soups and holiday poultry. It goes well with Christmas ingredients and Christmas dishes. Yeah, feel free to elaborate on that, Tom, if you've got some more truffles you want to throw in there seasonally. But it's always good to use what is fresh and in season. And again, go simple. If you do anything that is too complicated, you're going to compete with the truffle flavor, and what you really want to do is highlight that truffle. So stay away from things that are too acidic generally, or too spicy, or really strong fish, or the things that are in the cabbage family, unless you cook them down and serve them with a cream sauce, which is going to bring that truffle
yeah.
more early.
Yeah, well, I might amplify a little bit of that there, Susie. We've all heard the latest concept of farm to table, where we want to be growers, whether we're gardeners or more commercial, to get straight from the farm to the chef. And what I learned in the case of truffles is this puts another dimension to farm to table, in the sense that every truffle that I pull out of the orchard is different. Susie, we talk about these general terms of aroma. I could have two truffles under the same tree, and one might be that floral fruity, and the other one might be perhaps a little riper and be more earthy. And so what you do over the years is you develop relationships. I didn't do any wholesaling. I went straight to the chefs and the restaurants. So you get to know the chefs, and my gosh, I have a case one time, one year, I learned that Linton Hopkins, who's the restaurant Eugene in Atlanta, one of these top drawer chefs in the country, I learned that he likes earthy, musky truffles. So now when I'm hunting my truffles, I can set aside those for him. And so now he's got just the kind of truffles he wants, and then somebody else that likes the floral ones will get that little bit of truffle. So it's a fun relational thing, the marketing of the truffles. And if I might take 30 seconds on one story I have with Linton.
Of course.
It was Valentine's and New Year's are the largest days for the restaurant trade with regard to truffles, they're big events. Valentine's is near the end of the black winter truffle season, so I had some truffles that were, I was getting knots in my stomach. They were starting to turn, a little bit overripe, and I thought, oh my gosh, and it's Valentine's Day. He needs his truffles. So
yeah.
What I've got to send him some. So what I did was I doubled his order, and I didn't sleep well that night after I FedExed the truffles down to him, and I called him first thing in the morning, and I thought, oh boy, the last thing you want to do is lose a relationship because you sent a bad truffle. And I asked him, well, what'd you think of the truffles, with a lot of anxiety in my voice? He says, Tom, those are the best truffles you ever sent me.
Oh, wow.
So it's aromas are, it's a je ne sais quoi about the truffles. So they're all different. And so when you're a customer going to you got to find your deli or your, specialty food vendor and develop a relationship with them. In the case of a lot of the French truffles that come to the big truffle houses, they'll store their truffles for 2 or 3 weeks because they want to keep an inventory. And, of course, the aroma being volatile goes down over time. And at the same time, they can be adulterated with some other black truffles with that have very different off flavors. So a naive consumer is unaware of that. They see a black truffle and they think, oh, I got the black truffle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Develop a good, it is a relationship thing when you're working with truffles. There's three to the party. There's you and your vendor and the truffle, and all three have to work together to so that you get.
And then that vendor should know whether you want the musky notes or the fruity notes.
Yeah.
Within.
Yeah, that's why you got to be a regular.
Yeah. Okay, that makes perfect sense. And Susie, to clarify, it sounds like the best way to use truffles is actually in the dish rather than shaving them on top.
Well, it depends a little bit on which kind of truffle you have. To be more precise, the black truffle lends itself well to being heated a little bit. The heat warmth brings out the flavor of the black truffle species. Again, I'm lumping them together. Sometimes there's a little more subtlety between various species, but the warmth does bring out that flavor. If you had a black truffle sliver on top of a slice of raw tomato, for instance, you would definitely not be giving it its best chance to shine. The white truffles don't stand up so well to a lot of heat. Their flavor is more delicate and it will disappear if you heat it too much. By and large, if you serve it on warm food, be it a black or white truffle, if you serve it on food that has warmth, it's going to the flavor is going to disseminate a little mm-hmm. bit more, but you don't want to overcook either, particularly in the case of the white truffle. So yeah, delicate heating for the Perigord, little to no heating for the white or truffle, but served on a hot food is going to bring it out the best.
So it's going to be something you're going to add at the end. So
olive oil too.
Yeah, if I'm making a simple pasta with a buttercream sauce on it, I'm going to put that truffle in right at the end before I put the sauce on top of my pasta.
Right, so I would, if I'm doing that myself, I would cook my pasta. At the same time, I would melt some butter in a skillet and maybe put in just a tiny bit of shallot, because shallot is going to give it a little more flavor without overriding it like mm-hmm. garlic does. And then pour in some heavy cream, and then I'm going to grate the truffle into that just right at the last moment before I put it on the hot pasta and serve it. And that would work for white as well as black truffle.
And are you using a specialized grater?
You don't, or
is it like a microplane grater? Or
if you have it, okay. You can use your box grater if you have it.
Okay.
You can shave it on a mandolin if you have it, or you can use a knife if you cut nice thin slivers, whatever you got.
Okay, whatever you, okay.
That you eat it.
Got to make sure you sharpen that knife, though, because that's a problem with a lot of home chefs is we forget to sharpen our knives.
If I can add.
Yes, please, Tom.
If I can add a geeky note to that, don't go light on the fat. Truffles are, from the scientific perspective, the aromas, practically all of them are fat soluble. So you put the fat in there, the butter and what have you, or the under the skin of a poultry or what have you, that traps the aroma into the food.
Into the food, get it absorbed. Right. Yeah, which is exactly what we want to do. So if I... Once I've found my vendor, I've bought my truffles, what's the best way to store them at home?
Well, it's very interesting when you're hunting. Let me go back to getting that. Imagine you got that truffle straight out of the orchard. Mm-hmm. You know, forget the vendor for now. The truffle, if I would not sell that truffle. You know, you think, oh, the fresher, the better. Well, the first day out of the soil, that truffle, You haven't killed it by pulling it out of the soil. It has lots and lots of storage nutrients inside it that are still metabolizing and converting those nutrients to the beautiful aroma compounds. So if you keep that truffle in a sealed container, the aromas and the taste of that truffle will potentiate over the next 2 or 3 days, and so you have a much stronger bloom on the truffle. It's concentrated. So when you want to store a truffle, make sure you store it with, you know, make sure your container is not in a paper bag, and you know, put it in some Tupperware type mm-hmm. container or what have you. And then also I found it doesn't sound like much of a difference. The refrigerator is at 40 degrees Fahrenheit. The truffles, instead, don't put the truffle at 40 degrees. Store it, put that little container like you would if you were storing fish. You would put it on ice. So put that container in a little bowl of ice water so that now the ambient temperature in that container is about 32 degrees. And that will extend the shelf life or the useful life of that truffle for a long life.
So I want it just, I'm storing it above, just above freezing is what you're saying.
Yeah, just above freezing. So that's another news you can use sort of tip, I hope.
Okay.
Well, and I'll add to that in saying that immediately when you get a truffle, put it to work for you. That means store it with eggs in a closed container. For instance, a ball jar is perfect. A ball jar is even better than a plastic container because often plastic containers will lend a little bit of their flavor to whatever your food ingredient is. So store your truffles with eggs in a closed container. Store it with sticks of butter. You can put sticks of butter in a container with your truffles. And you know, the wrapping of the butter, you can just put the whole stick in. The wrapping of the butter is porous. The flavor will seep through into the butter, just like it will seep through the eggshells. And you can even put cream in with truffles as well. But anyway, in a matter of a couple of hours, that ingredient will already be infused with the truffle flavor, so that then when you cook with that, you will only need to use a very, very tiny bit to accentuate that flavor, because you've already captured a lot of the essence. And the truffle keeps giving and giving and giving as it's sitting in the refrigerator, continuing to ripen. You're really not depleting that truffle of its goodie by storing it with eggs and butter.
Wow, that's great. So that's a way that you're kind of making your own truffle butter versus Guam purchasing truffle butter that, as Tom has told us, we don't know if it's using something from the food industry chemically augmenting the flavor. So that would be fantastic.
Yeah, and the butter freezes well too.
So it sure does.
After you've made it, months after truffle season, you can still get a nice truffle treat from your freezer.
And truffle season, tell us a little bit. I think it's the late fall. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it depends on the species. So in case of the black winter Perigord truffle, it starts to ripen a little bit, maybe a week or two after Thanksgiving. It depends on the type of fall weather that you have. If you have, it's counterintuitive, totally counterintuitive, but if you have a warm fall, it slows down the ripening of the truffle.
Okay.
What on earth is going on with the biochemistry there? But if they have a nice cool fall, then those truffles will start to ripen early. Perigord in the case. So in December when they're starting to ripen and they have a noticeable aroma and are culinarily usable, they will be kind of a light milk chocolate if you cut, do a cross section through them, with more of a lighter floral aroma. And then as the season goes on, through by the end of maybe by about the first or second week in March would be typically the end of the Perigord truffle season. And as Susie mentioned, the White Alba truffle is a fall truffle
also.
Okay. And she mentioned a few others like Tuberuncinatum. That's a black truffle, very similar to the Perigord truffle, not quite as intense. That's also a fall truffle. So there's a Tuber estivum, which is, I'm not going to go into the species differences, but it's a summer truffle, and it has only a trace of what, but it has the same aroma profile as the black winter truffle, but nowhere near as intense. So you can tell by the price point, a summer truffle will be about one-tenth the price of a black winter truffle. A Burgundy truffle will be about, maybe 40, 50% of the price of a Perigord truffle. So the aroma is what you're getting there. And then we mentioned, maybe we should mention this Tuber borkii. It's a white truffle.
Mm-hmm.
And also we have, here in the Southeast, we're getting a commercialization of the pecan truffle that occurs naturally in all the pecan orchards. And it's properly handled. It used to be, it's so funny, they till a few years ago, it was just something they had to throw. They pick them off the conveyor belts because they're about the same size as a pecan, and they couldn't. They had to manually pick them out and they throw them away.
But oh now, man!
Now we find out. Holy mackerel!
Yeah, it's a good source.
Enterprising pecan growers are getting a byproduct second crop off their pecan orchards, and it's a whitish truffle. It has those sharper notes like the Alba truffle. So just something to be aware of as we see other truffles coming on the scene that are in the white truffle class that are making the marketplace. We're finally getting to that point now.
Perfect.
You could also mention, Flea, a few native truffles besides the pecan truffles.
Yes,
finding the Appalachian truffle and what is now being called the Blue Ridge truffle by many, as well as the Oregon truffles.
Do you want to pronounce the name?
So I'm gonna get Tom to give you the scientific names because he's the specialist.
That's okay. I think we've got the idea here.
The European truffles that we're dealing with here. Yeah, we're finding more about them daily.
Yeah.
You can say canilla colatum.
Okay, well, the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit kuci.org. You're listening to 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. This is In the Garden, and we've been talking about truffles with Tom Michaels and Susie Gott-Segare. Thank you, Tom and Susie, for joining us today and sharing your knowledge, and a special shout out and thank you to Victoria Michaels for arranging this.